bringing you in-depth discussion from one of the rad groups of online writers covering the Edmonton Oilers. Are you ready for Oilers Overtime? Join us as we talk news, rumors, trades, player grades, game results, and more, all featured on one of the most glorified teams in the NHL. From the great one to the next one, from the boys on the bus to the decade of darkness, this is Oilers Overtime.
Hey now, everyone. Welcome to, this is Julian Majul. Welcome to another episode of Oilers Overtime for the Hockey Writers. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see we're down another man again. We're missing our regular host, Jim Parsons. He's just taking a little time away for now. You know, I got the hosting reins again for the second time in Oilers Overtime history, so we're going to run with it again. We're coming to you a day late here just because of some scheduling conflicts, but we're back. We're ready to go. We have our regular guys here with us. We have Brian Swain. How's it going, Brian?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Colton, how are you doing? I know you were a little under the weather the other day.
Yeah, no, feeling better now and excited to get to it. I know we have some exciting things to talk about, so yeah.
That's for sure. Glad to hear that. So before we jump into anything, this week's show is being brought to you by The Morning Skate, a daily newsletter delivered to your inbox Monday to Friday, jam-packed with all the best hockey stuff on the planet. It's daily dose of the NHL news, rumors, history, funnies, quizzes, etc. Basically has everything. Just a little hockey fun and information brought to you every day of the week from the Hockey Writers. And you guys are going to want to see the link in the show description for that. Make sure you guys sign up. So we'll jump into the most latest news. And that would be the viral video that's coming out with the Draisaitl and Jim Matheson interview. I want to start with your guys' initial thoughts on the whole ordeal. We'll start with Brian. What did you think of the whole interaction in general?
Well, I might have a little bit of a different perspective on this than some other people, even that I have a background in media. And I mean, I've worked sports beats, so I know what it can get like when you're covering the same team day after day after day and asking the same questions. And to me, it was much to do about nothing. It just, that's the kind of, you know, you see that kind of stuff all the time. I think maybe the public is getting a more of a look at it now because all these interviews are done on Zoom and they're all posted online and stuff like that. So, but you know, I mean, that's probably like not even one of the top 25 worst interactions that Matheson's had in his career with somebody who did like a question. And I mean, I'm sure Draisaitl's he's been chippy with more than a few reporters over the years. So I couldn't believe how big of a story that was. I mean, it was the lead story on the 6 o'clock Eastern sports center, TSN on Monday or Tuesday. And it's just like, it was a lot of nothing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's something that just kind of shook, but like it was almost worldwide, plastered everywhere. Like you click any link and whatever, and it's, oh, Draisaitl sounds off on reporter. Even my dad called me today and said, hey, did you see the Draisaitl? Like, yeah, I saw that. He called me on the phone and when I was at work, and it was funny because he even saw it. Colton, what were your initial thoughts on the whole thing and how Jim, like we've seen this before with interactions with Jim Matheson. So what do you think of it now?
I mean, I thought it was kind of funny. I, like Brian said, I didn't think it was as big of a deal as some are making it out to be. I mean, I think over the years, there's probably been a lot more than fans are aware of that kind of happens like that we just don't see. And I think too, just the fact that the Oilers haven't played a lot lately and just that they're in this big spiral right now is kind of, it just kind of adds to it. It's just more drama. It's more for the media to write about. So I mean, I didn't think much of it. I understand what Matheson was saying. Sometimes Draisaitl can be a bit snarky, but at the same time, he's frustrated. They're not winning. And he got asked the same question a few times in a row, gave an answer for it on the first time, then obviously got frustrated that he was being asked almost the same thing again. So I thought it was more funny than anything. I'm not really too worried about it.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. Like I feel like it's just because of how stale, there's nothing kind of going on that, you know, they have to kind of make a story. I don't even know if it's making a story. I just think the interaction was very like, you know, it's just the frustration, and it's from even a reporter standpoint, like you're trying to find answers. And you know, and they don't, the players are tired of speaking about the same things over and over, because this has been ongoing for, you know, almost a month and a half now, right?
So I mean, it's very much a byproduct of just like day after day of the same thing. And they just want to get, they need to get out there and play. They want to get out there and play. I mean, we, you know, even when we were discussing stories last week, I mean, you said like, it just feels like we're beating a dead horse over and over again. Yeah. And it's true, right? I mean, it's just, this team has played what, like six times in the last five or weeks or something like that.
Yes.
So to be in that bubble, not the bubble, but within the bubble between media and players, and just every day, you could see how people might be getting a bit testy.
Yeah, for sure. So do you guys think, I'll start with Brian, because you kind of touched on it already, like with Draisaitl kind of, you know, his reaction, do you think that that's like, it was warranted? Do you think it's, you know, something that you're not surprised that we see more of, let's say, just because of the questions being asked, or like even not even specific to the Oilers, this could be league wide, let's say, like, you know, do we not see enough, I guess, passion or the frustration coming out from other players when they don't want to answer these type of questions, or they've already answered them and they're being asked again?
Yeah, well, I was saying a couple weeks ago here that I wanted to see the team get upset a bit more, you know. I mean, you are having to answer these same stupid questions every time because you're going through the same stupid situations every time, right? Get upset about that. Be a little bit passionate about that. So, I mean, I can understand. I'm used to being on the other side of it, on the side of Matheson, asking those questions. And, you know, I personally, I would have approached that situation differently as a reporter. But all that aside, I can completely understand why Draisaitl is getting a little bit perturbed. And I didn't think it was that bad. It was a little bit of a snarky comment. That's it. I mean, if you look at some of the interactions between media and players or coaches in, say, the NFL or the NBA, it's like a weekly thing, and it gets much more heated than that. And so for me, like I said at the top, just watching how this blew up, it's just kind of like, this is, it's nothing.
Yeah. No, I see that all the way. Colton, what do you think about it all? Do you think about his response? Like, do you think that snarkiness is something you'd like to see more of from these players when they get those kind of sideways comments, or should they just kind of respond and be done with it and not make a big deal of it? Or you think, like, do you like that little bit of flair that gets thrown in and a little bit of drama, I guess, that it creates?
Yeah, I like it. I think there's always talk about hockey players kind of just being robotic and lacking personality compared to other sports, like you see in the NBA and stuff quite a bit. And I think it just helps grow the game. So, I mean, we're talking about it a day later and it's all over the place, right? So, I mean, it caught a lot of people's attention. And yeah, I think it adds more excitement and kind of just more fun to get the fans engaged.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on to the next comment before anybody starts getting pissy. This is the, we'll talk on the recent loss to the Senators. They lost 6-4. Skinner got the net in that one, and it looked like it was his chance to kind of run with it. Brian, you're kind of looking sideways because that was your boy, and he had the ball, and he dropped it there for a second or two. But we'll start with you and what you thought. Like, is this rock bottom that Senators lost? Is there any lower to go at this point with losing to a team that low in the standings?
That we'll find out on Thursday night, I guess. I mean, you can always go. I mean, not to say that Florida's obviously a higher caliber than Ottawa. Ottawa's playing some decent hockey right now. I mean, they came in and they took 4 points from Alberta last week. So, rock bottom is only rock bottom until the next game, So we'll see how bad it can get. Yeah, but I mean, this is probably the lowest point they've been at this season. And again, this is all, so much of this is a byproduct of them playing so infrequently. They can never get back out to kind of have that bounce back game. And you look at everything, I mean, they played, what was that, Saturday?
Yeah.
I lose track of these games, but look at everything that's happened between now and Saturday. Look at everything that's happened between the last time we got together. I mean, there was the McDavid press conference where he spoke about Kane, and that was kind of taken the wrong way by some people. And then Smith gets hurt, and then Skinner comes back, and then he has a bad game, then he gets COVID, and then they lose again, and then Draisaitl gate, and it's just like on and on and on. And in all this time, they played one game, and all this stuff has happened. It's like, they just need to get out there and play.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even touch on that McDavid comment about Evander Kane. I mean, we can go to that quickly before we circle back.
That seems like it was 5 years ago now.
Yeah, exactly. And like, it's kind of like a, just a jumble of like, you know, things that happen, like you were saying, and the events that are happening, because they all get mixed in because they're not playing any games. So Colton, what did you think about that McDavid? Like, did you make anything of that? Or do you think like he didn't really say anything wrong there?
No, I mean, he's in a tough situation either way there. If he says he doesn't really want him, and then, I mean, I guess if he says that, Holland probably doesn't bring him in, but then if he does, that's just a very awkward dressing room dynamic. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like he wants to win. And if the league doesn't see suitable to punish him for anything, then I don't think there's any players in the league really, other than maybe ex-teammates he's had, he's rubbed the wrong way, that wouldn't want to give him a shot on their team just because he's a really good player. I mean, we touched on it last week. So I didn't see anything wrong about it. Again, I thought that was people kind of just getting, or just overreacting about really nothing.
Yeah, I think it was more of that whole dynamic of not having much to talk about and making something out of nothing again, because, you know, he said it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, he is not the one making that decision. He's going to support his general manager, whatever decision he makes, because he runs the team. So, I mean, he's kind of put in that tough position. So I agree with you there. So Colton, what did you think about that Oilers game and their recent loss 6-4? We'll circle back to that. Did you like how they played? Did anything stick out to you that, you know, was a blunder that they did? They didn't really do well.
Well, I thought from the first half of the second, or the, sorry, the second half of the first period, and then through the second, I thought they played quite well. And I really felt quite confident going into the third. And then obviously I didn't like what happened in the third period at all. I think it was 5 unanswered they gave up. And it was just, I don't know. I mean, like Brian said, you hope that's rock bottom, but then they're playing a Panthers team right away that just got beat pretty bad by the Flames last night. So they're not going to be happy either. So who knows how that's going to go. But yeah, I mean, that just kind of piles on with everything. I think just losing to a team that hasn't been very good this year, and in the way they did, it's just, it seems like this thing's just still spiraling more and more out of control, and I don't know where it ends.
Yeah, I watched that game on Saturday, and I thought that they were good, like you said, for a portion of that game. And they kind of, once that I think it was the second goal that they allowed, it was right at the end of the second period or something. And then it just kind of slowly just snowballed, and they didn't start that third period well at all. And Ottawa was just more hungry than them. And it just looked like it ended up snowballing into something more. And they lost momentum, and it kind of got away from them. And they did change the lines in that game. So I'll go to Brian. What did you think about those lineup changes? They had Draisaitl with McDavid on the top line alongside who was with them on that right side? It was Cassian. It was Cassian, right? Yeah. And then they had Hyman with McLeod and who was the right winger?
Yamamoto.
Yes, Yamamoto. So what did you think of that whole thing? Because I want to focus on the Cassian bump up onto that top line. Like, how did you think that whole thing worked?
I thought Cassian had a good game, but I mean, it's hard not to have a good game when you're playing with those two, right? So, I mean, this is kind of, speaking of beating dead horses, this is something we've talked about Cassian forever, right? And it's like, you know, he'll have these little blips where he plays really well and, you know, produces for you, and then he won't. And I, like I said, I thought he had a good game, but it's, he's not the kind of guy that, you know, you'd like to see him have a good game, maybe not playing with Draisaitl and McDavid, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe stepping up and being able to deliver in situations and providing some of that offense in the bottom six, making things happen there. So that was my kind of take on that. Looks like the lines are going back into a blender again for the Florida game. It's going to be interesting to see. And I think between just players in and out of the lineup and the fact that they can't get anything going, at this point, Tippett is just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, they are going to throw the lines. I have a tweet from Bob Stauffer. He tweeted out the lines at the skate. He had McDavid with Yamamoto and Fogle on that top line again. And Draisaitl went back to the second line, centering Puljujärvi and Hyman, McLeod with Cassian and Benson, and then Ryan with Sevier and Shore, and Perlini did not practice. So, Colton, they also had switched up their defense pairs. I think they had CC alongside Nurse. What did you think of that, how that pair worked? And should Bouchard – I think Bouchard went down to the third pair, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think Bouchard should be back up with Nurse, or did you like that CC Nurse combo?
I mean, it's hard to say to move Bouchard back up just because he really struggled last game. But at the same time, that could just be the stability of not having been with Nurse. I think the CC and Nurse is I do like that pairing, but I think those two have been the most consistent defenders on each side. So I think sometimes maybe putting them with a player that struggled or just isn't as strong is maybe the best way to balance it out. I just don't think they're strong enough outside of those two to kind of leave the four others amongst themselves. So I think that'll get split up again, but I did like the pairing.
Mm-hmm. I think I really like Cassian on that top line. I think that gives them more forward depth, a little bit more spread out. I'm not a fan of the Draisaitl with McDavid combo because I think it really leaves them weak down the middle, especially without Nuge in the lineup. And I think that when Nuge is back, he should be back up to that top left wing position with McDavid. I think they should try that out. And I'd like to see that happen. And I think overall the lines were good. It's just, you know, they weren't getting to the net after a certain point in the game. As for the defense pairings, I think I'd rather just see Bouchard stick with Nurse, let them just work it out themselves. And, you know, the less you switch defense, the better it is, because the chemistry on defense is a little bit, you know, more important than it is on the forward position. Because you can kind of insert guys in and out and they kind of do similar things. They know the system. Defense pairs, they're a little bit more particular. They want to puck a certain way off the boards, things like that. It's a little bit more specific. So I think I would kind of not tinkle with the defense pairs as much. Before we keep going, don't forget to sign up for the Hockey Writers Morning Skate again, morningskate.io, so you don't miss the best daily hockey newsletter on the planet, delivered every weekend at 8 a.m. sharp. Be the first to know what's going on in the world of hockey. Let's get to the elephant in the room from that game. Brian, we'll start with you and your boy Skinner. He looked good for two periods and kept them in that game for most of that whole game. And, you know, one kind of mistake and it looked like the wheels fell off for him again. And I guess the decision's already made of who's going to start next game because he's on COVID IR right now. And Smith is out with a thumb injury. So we're back to square one with our goalies and Costin's getting thrown in there. What did you think of Skinner's performance against Ottawa?
It was not good. Probably the worst game. I mean, he's only played 12 games in his NHL career, but that was easily the worst. And it couldn't come at the worst time because, and I wrote about this on the weekend, this was really a great opportunity for him to, you know, to potentially seize that starter's role, prove he can go in there and do it. And he just didn't play very well. And, you know, I mean, it is what it is. It's if he'd had a great game, I don't think we should have been anointing him as the goalie of the future, as much as I believe in that. And we have a bad game. I don't think, you know, we should, you know, say that, well, he's washed up now. He's not, you know, it's just, it's one game and I take it at that, but he was not very, very good at all. And he didn't come up with the big saves that he needed. To say it as well, that the defense did not play well in front of him. I didn't think he had a lot of help. We were just touching on that. That pairing of Lagesson and Bouchard was a disaster on Saturday. And so that didn't help matters. But maybe, you know, I've been saying give him a shot because this team needs a goalie and it could be his time already. And maybe it's just not his time. Maybe my expectations, maybe I had him a little bit ahead of the schedule. You know, having said that, and I'll be interested to get you guys, your takes on this. If Skinner was healthy tomorrow night or able to play on Thursday night against Florida, and it was him or Koskinen, who would you turn to? Who would you have more confidence in?
Well, that was going to be my next question to Colton. Like, Colton, would you, if he was, like Brian said, healthy, would you be starting him and giving him the ball still, even after that game that he had? Or is this net back to Koskinen's?
I mean, I think at this point, you know what you're going to get from Koskinen. So I do think I'd go back with Skinner, but I think this whole just kind of thing emphasizes the fact that you can't expect a 23-year-old goalie with as little experience as he has to save your season. Like, if they want to get into the playoffs, I still think they really need to add a goalie to this roster. I like what Brian said. I think Skinner's going to be a really good goalie. I think at this point he already is, but I don't think he's ready. It's not fair to him to put this kind of pressure on him to save their season. So I think they really need to add someone. But yeah, I do think if Skinner was healthy, I'd give him a shot and see how he bounces back, just because I don't have much faith at all in Koskinen right now.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes back to our last show and we were talking about what to do with Skinner. Should he stay down? Should he stay up? Should he play? And, you know, I kind of said that I'd rather not see him in the crease when the guys are playing bad in front of him, because then it makes him look worse, affects his confidence. So I'm kind of with you on that. I would probably just give it to Koskinen. He's more experienced. I think he's got, I'd like to see what Skinner does, but I don't want him in that environment right now. I think it's very hostile, very high stakes. And I don't want to see him fail because of the environment he's in, rather than him not being ready or the skill him not having the skill. So yeah, I think it's beneficial for him to kind of be the backup, share the load, but not shoulder it all himself.
You're really risking like ruining confidence, I think, by giving him that. Like I said, I think I would, but there is kind of he is still young, so you have to question what that could do to him.
See, yeah, exactly. I mean, the one thing I'm not concerned about with him is confidence. I don't think he lacks that. And he just had a bad game on Saturday. Like, I don't think he looked rattled at any point in time.
He never does.
Yeah. So that's not something I worry about with him. But to your point, Colton, I think you said it right, and I'm as guilty as anybody was, to maybe just expecting for him to save the season with the experience that he has at the age that he is. Maybe it is just too much to put on him, and especially on this team with how things are. I mean, it's not like he's being brought into Julian, like you said, it's not a very stable environment he's coming into right now. So that doesn't help matters either. So, I mean, I think, I'll admit it. He just might not be at that point yet. I still believe that he is that goalie. It just may not be now.
Yeah, no, I think he's the right guy for the job eventually, but they definitely do need to go out and search for somebody to help, because Smith doesn't look ready. He's too injury prone right now and he can't be trusted. And, you know, you need some sort of reliability from your goalie crease, and it's not, they're just not getting it right now. So to tag along with that, we'll switch gears a little bit and go to what's Ken Holland going to do to fix this whole situation? What does he specifically need to add in order to help these guys get out of it? We don't know if they're going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline yet. They currently sit seventh in the Pacific, but they have a bunch of games in hand, so they could easily, you know, jump back into a playoff spot with some of those California teams kind of playing over their head, I think, in my opinion right now. So I think they do have a chance still to make it in, but they got to turn this thing around quick. And I think a trade can help facilitate that. Specifically, Brian, what player would you like Ken Holland to go out and acquire in order to help this team right now?
Realistically?
Realistically or theoretically, I don't care. Something needs to be done. So who would you bring in?
Marc-Andre Fleury, but I don't think that's realistic.
Okay.
It's got to be a goalie, but I just don't know who's out there. Like, I don't, anyone that you bring in that would be available and that you can make the trade work in terms of just the numbers and everything, I don't know if that goalie is going to be any more reliable than what you have right now. It's just like, right now you've got this crazy mix of Koskinen and Skinner and Smith, and like, one of them can't stay healthy, one of them can't play consistent, one of them's not experienced. Like, none of them check all the boxes. And if you throw another goalie into this mix, it's just going to be like four guys where it's like, I don't know what I'm going to get tonight. So, you know, I mean, what they need to do is bring in somebody that they can rely on. And I just don't see that trade being out there right now. The one thing that's interesting, though, is that we're seeing, with there's such a large gap in the Eastern Conference playoff right now, it's like becoming pretty clear, only at the midpoint of the season already, that there are going to be so many teams are so far out of the race, there could be a lot of sellers. So I'm curious to watch you over the next few weeks, if it starts to emerge that on one of those teams that's maybe outside in the East, and there are some good goalies on those teams, maybe they would come available, or maybe Holland might be able to put together some kind of thing to prime out of there.
Well, Fleury's the main guy for sure. Like, that's the main target that everybody's kind of linking to them, and he'll be available because Chicago doesn't look like they're going into the playoffs this year. But that salary cap is what makes it difficult. Now, we've seen teams in the past kind of manipulate that and get a third team into the trade to help retain salary. So I don't think it's out of the question, especially if you can move Koskinen's contract. But then you're kind of going into a situation where you don't really have a legit backup, and you're still with that inexperienced Skinner as the second guy. But I do agree that they do need a goalie. Colton, what specific player would you add into this mix to try and resuscitate this season, I guess?
Like you guys said, Fleury is the one that would be my ideal pick, but just making that trade work obviously isn't easy. So, and I know Holland said too, he wanted to add guys that had term, not just rentals. So one guy I look at is Barlamov with the Islanders. They're struggling. He's got a few years left. They have a younger goalie who they really think is the future in Sorokin. So I wonder if he's up for grabs. I think he's proven over the last, well, he's been in the league for quite a while now that he's a reliable starting goalie. There's Georgiev with the Rangers, Korpisalo with the Blue Jackets. But like Brian said, are they upgrades? It's hard to say. I mean, I don't think it could be much worse. I think if they have to, if they can't get some of those other guys, then you just do bring one of them and just kind of hope it works out. But yeah, I would say outside of Fleury, maybe Varlamov. There's Allmark in Boston now too with Rask returning. They have Swayman in the minors. So that's another guy with term. But again, those are still pretty high cap hits. So Holland would have to get creative.
Yeah, it's funny you say Varlamov because that was actually the guy I was going to go with because I liked a little bit of term. It's only a $5 million cap hit. So I think there's a way to manipulate the cap and get creative with third team to make that happen. And I think even Koskinen could probably go the other way to save you some salary there too. Especially because the Islanders are falling fast out of that Metro Division race, even with the games in hand. So that's the key for me. And like Brian said, you know, the Eastern is very, very divisive right now. So the guys who are going to contend are almost already, you know who those teams are going to be rather than, you know, the ones that are kind of falling behind right now. So that might be the ideal target. I like what you said about the other goalies. One guy I'll say is Anton Khudobin. I think he may not be a legitimate upgrade to what the currently situation is in Edmonton. But I think, you know, we've seen him go on a run in the playoffs for Dallas. He's got 2 years left, still at 3.5 or somewhere, 3.3, somewhere around there. And if you get them to retain some salary, Dallas is still kind of in the mix. So that one will be something that has to develop and see where they kind of end up. But that's a guy that I think that they could kind of go out and acquire and hope he gets hot. And if he shares the load with somebody like he did in Dallas, I mean, you know, you have a tandem, some sort of tandem, and just hope it works out, because standing pat and hoping one of these goalies is getting hot when they haven't done it all season is just not going to be the way to go. So that's kind of where I'm going to leave that. We're going to introduce a new segment and kind of see how this kind of runs. So it's going to be called Plus One, Minus One. All right. So idea of it is anything you guys may have seen in the media, any specific players or performance on the ice, off the ice, any moves. Kind of want to see what you guys think of, you know, giving a plus one to a guy who's done well or a minus one to someone who hasn't, or some theme that hasn't. So anybody in the comments watching this after, please let us know how we do, how this is. Do you like it? Do you not? Just so we can, you know, tailor it to you guys. So we'll start with Brian. What is your plus one, minus one for this week, let's say?
I am going to give a plus one to Brendan Parlini with the asterisk that hopefully he's able to play on against Florida on Thursday. This guy had a heck of a week. He scored. He probably was one of the best players on Saturday. He scored again. He's got goals in his last two games. He gave like the media availability interview of the year on Monday. Like everyone was feeling good. It was all sunshine and rainbows in Edmonton for about 24 hours there until the following day. But, you know, and he was getting a chance. He may yet get a chance to play on the top line with McDavid. And I think he might be able to, you know, for a few games, be able to provide something in that role. So this is a guy who, you know, he's playing well right now. He's hopefully going to get a great opportunity. And Edmonton has fallen in love with him. So there you go. There's your plus one.
Okay, that's awesome. So I agree. I think he's been, you know, kind of a bright spot on a very dark situation that they have going on. So we'll take it. We'll take what we can get over here in Edmonton. Colton, what's your plus one, minus one for this week?
Well, Brian took mine there with the Perlini thing, and I didn't really have a backup plan. But I think I'll go a plus one too, because I just think the minus one with Skinner, we already harped on that. So I'll say the plus one is Ryan McLeod. I know the offense still hasn't been there a ton, but I do think he's looking a lot more confident in games right now. And I've really liked what I've seen from him. And I think he's showing that in a year or two, like this third line centerman that this team's been looking for, I think he's already somewhat proven capable of that. And I think his offensive game's coming around. So I think he's going to be a pretty important player for them down the stretch. So I've been impressed with him.
Yeah, he has played well as of late. It's good to see that because we need some contributions from our young up-and-comers, which is good. I'll be the Debbie Downer again, I guess, on this one. You kind of took mine a little bit, Brian. I was going to go plus one just for Brendan Perlini because of his interview, if you guys caught it on the post-press conference. Just, you know, he was so grateful and all sunshine and rainbows and happy-go-lucky, even despite the situation. So that was going to be my initial one. But I'll go minus one to Ken Holland because something needs to be done, like, now. Time to act on what's going on. I know it's a tough situation just because of, you know, you haven't seen much of your team play. You're trying to see what exactly you need. And he doesn't want to make a move just to make a move, but something needs to be done because you can't keep rolling like this. And this is what now I think they're 3-10-2 in the last, since December 1st or something. Like, that is atrocious. And you know, we've seen his press conference the last couple of days, or over the last week, I think it was. And you know, I think he said the right things there, but now the ball's in his court where he needs to do something and he hasn't yet. So minus one for him right now, this week. So before we end, in case we haven't convinced you with our first two plugs, if you sign up for the Morning Skate newsletter, you'll get to receive some of Wes McCauley's most legendary moments as an NHL referee. And that's the kind of content that puts a smile on your face. So join the fun at morningskate.io. So I guess we'll wrap this one up. For Brian and Colton, I'm Julian. Hopefully the Oilers can get a win against Florida in their next game. And we'll have something positive to talk about next show. Thank you guys for joining us. And we'll see Jim back hopefully next week. Go Oilers, go. And check you later, guys.